ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightline. News breakdown.
Well, one of the toughest journalistic jobs has to be sitting through the Senate estimates hearings. As senators often wanting to gain a moment in the media, limelight, they grill public servants about expenditure contracts and so on, so on, where taxpayer dollars have gone. Look, it's all important in a way too, and it's become more important over the years. It can be very tedious with only occasional gotcha moments or displays or extreme squirming to lighten the long days. Essentially, it's about public servants and other statutory officers being grilled by senators about where the money's gone and what it's been spent on. Tori Shepherd, senior reporter for The Guardian, has been on estimates duty for the past couple of weeks, and she joins us to report for our Nightlife news breakdown just before she has a breakdown of her own, I suspect. Tori, good evening to you, and welcome to Nightlife.
Phil, you described it very well. It is an incredibly important tool of democracy and transparency and accountability. And yet, sometimes it's really hard to focus when people are in the weeds of some bureaucratic nonsense for an hour. So you start to zone out, and then you hear the word ICAC, and you're like, what have I missed? Yeah.
There's always stories come out of it, aren't there? Because, I mean, here we go. Who would have thought, who would have thunk about PwC? Unless a small finding by some regulatory board hadn't been picked up by a newspaper, we wouldn't have known anything about it, because certainly PwC weren't confessing. But I'll tell you what, the story came up a lot in all departments, because it turns out that PwC has fingers in seemingly everyone's pie.
Everybody's pie. And look, it's a story that's kind of been, I guess, secretly simmering and then gradually snowballing for 8 years, picking up a little bit. And then even in just the last week and a half of Senate estimates, it is absolutely exploded. Last week in estimates, I mean, everybody was asking about it, but it was in a sort of desultory, like, oh, it's just that thing they did with the multinational tax, you know, where they took the confidential information from the government and used it to advise people on how to minimise their own tax payments. You know, it's nothing to do with us in our department. And now this week has been much more like, we will be reviewing every single contract we have with PwC and whether or not they are an ethical company that we should be signing any more contracts with at all again ever.
Yeah, I mean, having raised the matter here on the program, I know the reaction of ordinary punters and taxpayers has been one of, you know, open-jawed astonishment that they were allowed to get away with this and that no one's being punished for it. And you get the sense that there is a lot more to this story than we've currently heard about.
Which is exactly where estimates comes into its own, I reckon, because we've seen, you know, emails tabled, you know, 144 pages of emails where there are 53 people, it seems like, who knew about this, who now, of course, through that Senate process, people are trying to get them named. We've also heard that, you know, there are nine people now on leave, but
nine unnamed people on
nine
leave.
This is
the example of the new PwC transparency, apparently.
Right, exactly right. But I mean, what you do have in estimates is at least a process. Here are the questions that we put to you. Here is the information you need to produce. Let's actually find out how many contracts there are. I think Defence had, you know, gobsmacking number of contracts. But every session of estimates I've watched, whatever department today, it was Social Services, you know, Home Affairs, AFP, have all said, oh, yeah, we've got all these contracts with PwC. So there is that, you know, which has led to a broader conversation about just why we've outsourced so much of that work, particularly to a profit-making company.
Mm. Well, you have the extraordinary situation of the AFP, who are now have been tasked by the Treasury to investigate whether any charges should be laid or what's gone on in terms of the illegality of what has potentially occurred with PwC leaking confidential information. Guess who the auditor of the AFP is? It's PwC.
It's circles within circles. And then you kind of come to, oh, well, you know, a lot of these other departments are defending themselves and saying, no, don't worry, we've got confidentiality contracts, we protect ourselves, we've got processes, we're fairly confident that this wouldn't happen to us. It's like, well, I think you'll find that there were several confidentiality contracts signed in that case where PwC, where that information then went from, confidential government information about multinational tax changes, out into the world and was monetized.
The Federal Treasury Secretary, Stephen Kennedy, was grilled today too. He rejected suggestions that PwC has systematically failed his department. Maybe he would say that, wouldn't he? Even though the firm's chief executive has quit, 9 partners have been directed to take leave, pending the outcome of an internal investigation. The newly installed female, I note, head of PwC, has been apologising to anybody that she encounters in the corridor, on the street, on the bus, anywhere. Treasury Secretary Stephen Kennedy says the situation, although clearly disturbing, he doesn't see PwC as having failed his department.
But do we have cause to more carefully look at these issues, to review and reform the Tax Practitioners Board, to increase the penalties available, to do all those things? The answer to that is clearly yes, and that's what the government has asked us to do, and they've begun to do that.
You've also been at the social services estimates hearings. What's come up here?
Well, look, social services, I mean, incredibly important, obviously. They've got, you know, all the welfare portfolios under that brand. The theme which kept coming around again and again, and everyone's talked about this before and it'll keep coming up, was it good enough to give a $40 increase to JobSeeker recipients, where the government is still planning on giving those massive stage 3 tax cuts, which overwhelmingly benefit the rich. And, you know, there is a, having just talked about all the important things that the Senate does, it is also an opportunity, I suppose, to grandstand and to refine those arguments by different senators. But there were some interesting moments, because mostly it was the Greens going after the government and saying, come on, Labor, you said you'd leave no one behind. You kept saying that. And yet somehow you're delivering billions and billions of dollars in tax cuts, overwhelmingly benefiting the rich, while not giving more money to those who could really use it. But there was this really, it's always interesting with a change of government, because, you know, you've got the opposition senators grilling the government senators, but over a lot of things that happened under their watch. So at one point, Liberal Senator Anne Raston, who, you know, was in the government that sort of legislated these stage 3 tax cuts, was grilling Labor Senator Don Farrell and saying, didn't you hear ACOS say, you know, ACOS's Cassandra Goldie was saying there's going to be a million people still living in poverty. Are you okay with that? So it's sort of a strange farcical situation where the Labor...
Hang on, Anne Rushton was the social services minister.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got this slightly farcical situation of Don Farrell going, wasn't surprised that the Greens were grilling me on this, but I'm a little surprised for a coalition senator to be coming after me, seeing as this was your legislation. So, you know, there's always that interesting thing. Of course, you know, it's holding the public service to account, but also the senators of the day. So that was the main theme that was running through today, the social services.
The Senate also has referred to an inquiry into the universal access to reproductive health care. Now, we talked a bit about rural GPs last night on Nightlife, how they're in short supply and how many rural and regional areas are suffering when it comes to provision of medical services. But this inquiry into the universal access to reproductive health care is interesting. There's been a bit of a push on about this. What's all this all about?
Look, it's really interesting, and I felt as though this report... It dropped a little bit quietly last week. I'd been looking forward to it and following the inquiry. And then, you know, sometimes there's just so much news going on that something important can kind of be a little in it. But so thankfully it came up again in Senate estimates today. And look, this inquiry, it was looking at, it was exhaustive. It was looking at access to contraception. It was looking at access to termination services. And it was looking at access to all maternity services. And the main finding was the completely unequal access, these deserts where, you know, you have people who can't access contraception. And this really interesting recommendation, which is that we need to be looking a lot harder at male contraception, which I then researched and could talk to you now about for hours, because we think of it as being just vasectomies and condoms, but there's actually been a range of short-term and slightly longer-acting contraceptives for men. And that sort of just gets... ignored in general. And then looking at access to abortion services, which, again, it's so patchy around Australia, and like quite an interesting recommendation, because it was absolutely unanimous from, you know, coalition, independent, Greens and Labor senators that public hospitals should be offering abortions, and at the, if they really, really can't, and of course there are some Catholic public hospitals, offering very clear pathways to people.
Yes, it's a strange thing. It's a strange thing, isn't it? Because after all, it's you know, it's not illegal to seek an abortion, and in Australia, in any state now, it's a perfectly legal procedure. And you would think in a public hospital that a woman ought to be able to approach a public hospital and have and have such a procedure available. But the truth is, they can't.
No. And the states, I mean, it's such a patchwork of laws in terms of when you can, when you can't. And one of the other really interesting recommendations in this inquiry was a massive expansion of the ability to prescribe a medical termination. So looking at maybe nurse practitioners, midwives being able to prescribe.
You're talking about the morning after pill thing.
Yeah. It used to be called RU486 and now they call it the two-step.
Yeah.
Again,
I'm using a piece of terminology here so people understand what we're talking about.
Oh, yes, yeah, no, yeah. Thank you. And actually, there's a much trickier terminology that I completely blanked on, so thank you. But again, you have this huge divide between rural, regional and cities, and then you start to think about, you know, an unintended pregnancy in a tiny country town. And we sort of think that maybe it used to be hard and it somehow got better, but it really hasn't. So many services have shut down, and, you know, we talk about GPs, and of course GPs often offer birthing services as well, but there's also, you know, midwives have really often given up on some of those rural and regional services because they're not supported enough or their model of cares aren't supported enough. So there was these sweeping recommendations, and as I said, unanimous recommendations from this parliamentary inquiry that sort of dropped a little bit quietly. So I was happy to hear it come up in Senate estimates again today, because I think, you know, once you've got that sort of support behind it, we will start seeing these reforms. I don't know how quickly. And people should be maybe more aware of the basis and the research that went into those recommendations.
Sure. Tori Shepherd's with us, senior reporter for Guardian Australia on Nightlife News Breakdown. The Greens are pushing hard on to get more taxes on the oil and gas industries. Well, they're pushing the government hard on lots of things. But they're demanding a federal government bolster its changes to taxes on fossil fuel companies. As we've said before in the program many times, and listeners by and large wholeheartedly agreed, it seems crazy that we're not taxing gas companies, given the fact that they're making windfall profits. They're accusing Labor of reaching a sweetheart deal with the sector. This is after the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, said he would hope to raise an extra $2.4 billion, peanuts really, from the petroleum resources rent tax. Greens leader Adam Bandt says the Treasury's carved out the Northwest Shelf off the coast of New South Wales, of WA, and says that there'll be no changes there. He says it's evidence that big gas corporations are being protected.
The tax is still broken. They're meant to be subject to it. They should pay their fair share of tax. As I say, even after these changes, Australia only brings in a few hundred million dollars extra from these big gas corporations that are making billions of dollars of profits. It's about a tenth of what comparable countries bring in.
Yeah, it's a favourite focus of the Greens, I know, but it's got a lot of popular support, and it's sometimes puzzling, I think, to people as to why the government isn't going harder on this, given the windfall profits the companies have made.
Right, and then do remember we have had fights over mining resource taxes before, where you've had some extremely powerful groups speaking out against it, which in an ideal
hard
world
to see,
should
I
not
know.
Matter.
Hard to see why that process would be repeated today, I must say.
Yeah, well, and let us not forget that $2.4 billion is over 4 years, which when you look at the huge numbers bandied around in the budget in terms of debt and deficits, huge numbers that we've got, again, in those stage three tax cuts, $2.4 billion over 4 years, it's peanuts.
It's peanuts.
And so there are all these exemptions, and that Northwest Shelf is getting a bunch of extra exemptions around, you know, it started some of that stuff, and I think the Greens are particularly picking on Woodside's projects there, started before the PRRT was introduced. So there's some exemptions that are being built in which will reduce the PRRT take. So you can see the Greens, first of all, being annoyed that it's peanuts in the first place, but then going, right, but why does that seem to be special treatment? And look, the government has arguments again, you know, about when those projects were set up and so on. But I think, you know, it'll be pretty interesting, because it looks like the coalition may well fall into line, which means the PRRT, that'll go through. But the government still has to deal with the Greens on a lot of very important legislation that it very much wants to pass both houses, including the housing fund.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't really want to annoy them too much.
Well, they say they're not moving on the housing fund, do they? So maybe, do you think, are you suggesting that there might be some horse trading, because the Greens are getting better at this, there might be some horse trading perhaps on other things, including resources tax, if the government was prepared to ease it, to give a bit more on that, then the Greens could give a bit more on the housing fund?
Well, possibly. I mean, there's always some kind of horse trading. But the other thing with the Greens is one would think that they learned the lessons about, and I know this is trite and has been repeated ad nauseum, the lesson about the perfect being the enemy of the good after their, you know, initial opposition to a carbon tax on the basis of it wasn't good enough. And I think there will be a very powerful argument about this housing fund. It's already been delayed because the Greens didn't get on board, which means people are still homeless and the houses aren't getting built. And you can imagine there's quite a strong political attack there that Labor could have. Well, we had this money ready to go, but it was blocked in the Senate. Who blocked it in the Senate? The Greens, the very people who should be on your side. So it's very hard to imagine the Greens allowing that political argument to continue. So even though they say they're not budging, you know, Adam Bant is he's one of the pragmatic Greens.
They'll budge.
I suspect they will. It'll be a matter of, you know, again, what deals get done where and any changes and maybe, you know, and maybe change in a completely different area, like rent and caps or something.
Politics is a dirty business, Tori, but I guess you knew that, having been around for a while. All right, good to talk. Tori Shepherd's a senior reporter for Guardian Australia. Thank you, Tori.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.